It's a pleasure to be here. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Very good. So TG told me that Einstein said you should simplify everything, but not too much. So I wonder if you think I'm simplificating too much. We will see what you think about that. So I'll speak about holography and how holography has made me to study about relativity. So this is an example of what is not simplified. So I will not speak about those equations, but I'll try to do it a little simpler. So here is a way to make an ellipse. And all my talk will be about ellipses all the time. So you can draw an ellipse by having one nail there, another nail there, and a string. And you keep the string straight, you can draw an ellipse, where, of course, the distance from A up to the ellipse and down to B is constant all around the ellipse. That's a way to make a hologram, too. So A, this is the laser where light goes out. B is the observer or the holographic plate where light goes. And one beam goes there to one mirror that is a reference mirror. And another beam goes to any object there. And if they have a very short coherence length, or very short pulses, you can make holograms only of things that are along this ellipse. If there is snow or rain or smoke or small particles in the air, you could see this ellipse out in the space here. And really it is an ellipsoid, it's a round ellipse. It could be like, we can start with this at once. So this is a sphere, but there is an ellipse. And I will show that the changes between sphere and then the ellipse can explain a lot in physics. This is a sphere of light, perhaps. If there was a source of light inside here, and it gave a very short pulse, and you make a very short observation, would you see this balloon of light in that case? Do you think so? Well, that's the way I will go speaking about different phenomena. So now it's darkness. So I have to thank TG for the possibility to use a more old-fashioned way of describing things. So this is a center of light giving out spherical waves in all directions. This is another set of circles. If you combine those two, you get strange fringe patterns. If one of the patterns is a source of light, and the other set of circles is observation circles. So in one of these, the circles go outwards with the speed of light. In the other, the circles go into the observer with the speed of light. Combined, they produce one set ellipsoids, as you see here, ellipses, where that is one focal point of the ellipse and there is the other focal point. If one of these is the circles going out, the light, and these are the circles going inwards to the observer there, then the ellipses here will be stationary. If this it's a circus going, this is a light source, and that one is also a light source. In that case, you will see hyperbolas instead. And these are the hyperbolas that can explain the resolution of a lens, for instance. If this is a lens, this is the resolution of the lens, while the ellipses here tell us the resolution of holographic measurements. So the ellipses are my speciality, the hyperbolas are Qi's speciality. So together we can solve almost everything in physics. There we are again. We'll switch this off again. The circles at the ellipses, as I've been speaking about. And now we are back to this balloon again. So if this is a point source of light, it gives a very short pulse. And then we make a very short observation from B here. What do you think B will see? Will he see a balloon of light if there is smoke in there? Well, he wouldn't see anything because, of course, the light has gone out from A to the sphere here, but it's not reached B yet, so he wouldn't see anything, of course. So he couldn't see this sphere of light from outside. So does it exist? If you can't see it, does it exist? Well, as soon as you look at it, it exists. As soon as you detect the sphere, it exists. But before that, that's a question. So look at the next. Here, the sphere has passed B. So suddenly he can see the sphere from inside. From this point, he can see the sphere of light here. But what will he see? He wouldn't see the sphere. He will see that he is inside an ellipse. As time goes by, the ellipse will grow more and more, and at the last it will become a circle. And now we are back to the ellipse again. And you see, if you shorten this string, the ellipse will be thinner and thinner, and only if you make this string infinity long, it will give a sphere. And there is a setup for the holography again. So here is how we make light-in-flight recording by holography. We are in a space where there is a lot of snowflakes or particles. A is a light source. B is a point where you observation through a hologram. That is a reference mirror. And this is one of the snowflakes. And what we will record here on the hologram will be all the smoke, the snowflakes that exist on this ellipse, but nothing outside or inside, because it makes a short pulse and a short observation. That means you have a certain length of this string here. So we'll see what's happening. This is a holographic plate, and onto the holographic plate arrives the reference beam. The reference beam comes in this direction, and you get the recording only where you have both object light and reference light at the same time. You get no hologram if you first throw a reference beam on, and later on an object beam, you'll get nothing. Only where the reference beam here hits the plate, only there will be a recording of what's happening to the object. And this pulse front that you see here, it moves over the plate like that. And it even moves with a speed higher than light. So it is like your shutter, so moves with a speed higher than light and records everything that is happening to the object. That's simple. This is the setup we used. This is simple. We didn't have any laboratory for making holograms. As a screen, I took an old door. You see the handle over there. I put the mirror close to this door. I have a holographic plate there. The reference mirror here. A laser is over here somewhere. And it throws a short pulse, moving with the speed of light, across the door. And what is the result? Here is what we recorded on the holographic plate. So this is a part of a spherical wave, or is it elliptical? Anyhow, we say a spheric wave moving in this direction. This is when it just has reached the mirror. Slightly later, the beginning to be a reflection from the mirror. Slightly later, the reflection is moving away. So this is a very simple way to see the light. Usually you don't see the light itself. You remember the door? When we published this, I said, I hope this will open a door into a new field of research. And that time, I didn't know that this door opened the field to understand special relativity. That I didn't have any idea of at that moment. We use the same method to study what happens when light goes through a lens. So there's a lens. This is a wavefront, a very short pulse, because the thickness here tells how short the pulse is. It goes through the glass there. It is focused by the lens to this point. Here it is just creeping out of the lens and there. This is how each exposure looked like. First, before the light, before the lens, going through the lens, and then go toward focus. And that was the first time something like this has been published. It can be used to many different things. I thought I had some. Yes. So this is just a propeller, and we can use a short pulse of light as a thin sheet of light moving towards the propeller to study the shape of the propeller. So this is what happens first. The light has just reached the hub here on the propeller and some of the blades. Slightly later, light has moved a little further on. And slightly later, it is down on the further away. So you see the intersections moving through the propeller, or through a phase, or through anything you want to measure. And the shorter pulses we have, the higher measuring possibilities there will be. And all these images that represent different points of time are photographs through the same plate, just looking at different parts of the plate. If the reference comes from the left, we see at the left part of the plate, we see what happens first, and at the right part, we see what happens last. And you can also make a movie by moving a camera along the holographic plate. Interferometry. This is a simple interferometry. Michelson interferometer, the laser, semi-reflecting mirror, one mirror there for the reference beam, and one mirror there to the object, to measure displacement of the object. And the displacement is very easy to measure, because you just count number of fringes that are detected here. So number of fringes multiplied by half the wavelength, you get the displacements you have had here. That's not difficult. But then came holography, and in holography you have an angle too. You have this angle, 2 alpha, there. So light goes to the object, is reflected by the object, and then to B. And as this is three-dimensional, all this, the angle will change all over the object, and change with the photographic situation you have. So, this is another example of interferometry. It's a zebra. And you see all the fringes. But I don't know how to count the displacement using them. So this was published by Charles West. There he is. And it's a rather silly idea to think there could be anything connected between holography and zebra. But anyhow, he became the president of MIT after he published this silly idea. So you should not be afraid of coming with strange ideas. It doesn't stop you. So if we want to measure in holographic interferometry, we could measure the bending of a rod here. And we just count the number of fringes multiplied by half the wavelengths, the way we said before. And this can be used to study big machines. We can study vibrations and deformations of very big machines. And for this, I made this hollow diagram. It's a diagram that just tells you if this is a light source, a laser, this is a holographic plate, and you have an object here. Instead of calculating what is cosine for 2L alpha, you just use this diagram. So it's a sort of tool to simplify measurements using holographic interferometry. The same thing again. Here you see here are the ellipses. And there's the angle 2 alpha. And the spheres of illumination moving outwards. And the spheres of observation moving inwards. And in that case, these ellipsoids or ellipses are stationary and can be used for measurement. You see, they are all made up of rhombs. Every dark point here is a rhomb. And the rhombs have different shape at different distances from A and B. So if you look at one of the rhombs, this distance tells the resolution of a lens. This distance in the rhomb tells the resolution of holographic interferometry. And the reason why we have the angle alpha is, of course, simply that A, the laser source, and B, the observer, are not at the same place, but there is a distance between them. If this distance were zero, we are back to ordinary interferometry, and we have no problem of any alpha. But when we have this distance, we have the problem of alpha, and we have to use a little triangulation. And this made me think about holography, about relativity. And why is that? Well, let us look at next page. It looks very exactly the same as the first one. And it is exactly the same. It's the only difference is that A and B here, they are not at a static distance between them, as in ordinary holography, but they are caused by the velocity of the one who makes the experiment. So now I am B, I come here, give a flash of light, and then I move like this, I move like this, and now I make an exposure, now I make my observation. So there is a distance between the observation and the illumination just because of my speed, just because of velocity. So the same equations we have in holography, instead of the static distance between those two points, we say we have the velocity of the one who makes the measurements. So now we're back to relativity. This is quite a clever man. And the strange thing that he invented relativity before anybody knew anything about holography. So without knowing holography, he could invent his relativity. Very clever. This is the same thing I've been speaking about before. So the ellipses here, they are caused by the distance between illumination source and observation source, And either it is this distance L, or this is a distance caused by the velocity of the one who makes the experiment. L is equal to velocity times t. And all these equations, which you don't have to bother about, they are the same. So you start with k. K value is what I had in the holodiagram to understand holography. And gamma is what Einstein has for understand relativity. And the equations are exactly the same, I think. So Lorentz contraction, that is something that there's a lot of speaking about. They think that objects that move fast, they become shorter. That's one of the more interesting things in relativity. And I explain that in this way. A person here is making measurements using a sphere. He gives out a short pulse here. He makes a short observation again. And then he can see everything on this sphere. So he can measure the length of this object because it's just touching his sphere. So that's a way to make a measurement. So we say this is a sphere of observation. Now if it's moving from A to B, the sphere will change into an ellipsoid. Of course it does. So when he gave out his pulse here, and the light is moving like this, and during that time he himself is moving like that, and the result is that the sphere becomes an ellipsoid, ellipse, a three-dimensional ellipse. We name it ellipsoid. And in that case, the object was stationary while he was running. The object has the same length as before, but it appears to him to be shorter because it doesn't reach to the ends here of the ellipse. And he is all the time thinking he's using his sphere of observation, because the one who's traveling, he doesn't know that the sphere is changed to an ellipsoid. There's no reason for him to know that. So he thinks he's inside the sphere, and the result will be that he thinks that the object was so much shorter because it didn't reach the ends of the sphere here. So that's my way to explain Lorentz contraction. If we think about the string we used when we made the drawing, we had a string here, and then we changed the two nails. Here the two nails are together, so that produces a sphere. If we change so the two nails are displaced like that, we get this ellipse. But then the string is too short, so the ellipse has gone down in thickness. And that is impossible in physics. So there is no reason that an object that moves fast should become thinner in the direction perpendicular to its motion. This is no reason to believe that. So we have to lengthen the string to get it back into the ellipse that has the same thickness as the sphere head. So we have to lengthen the string. And how can we lengthen the string? The string is the velocity of light multiplied by time. And as Einstein says, the velocity of light is always constant. We have to change the time. So if we delay the time, we say the seconds are longer. If the seconds are longer, this string becomes longer, and we get these ellipses. And in that way, we can find out how much to change the time, how much should the time be delayed. And we get exactly the same equations as are well known in relativity. Collapse of the sphere. Dualism of light. Here we see again this ellipse. And the observer at B, he will see he's inside an ellipse. before that, he saw that he was inside the thinner ellipse. Before that, the ellipse was still thinner, and before that, the ellipse was a straight line. So the ellipse has shrinking into a line, and that could perhaps explain why we sometimes say that light is waves, and sometimes we say that light is rays. Light is either waves or light is photons. So the first light that reaches you, it reaches you in the shape of a line, of a ray. Well, what happens if this sphere is caused by one single photon? This is not my idea, but in physics they say even a single photon will produce a sphere. But if you absorb that photon, the whole sphere collapses. It disappears, it collapses. That's what they say in the book. I don't say that the sphere collapses. That's the sphere. And what they say is, I hope this will work. That's what they say in physics. I don't say the sphere collapses like that. I say the sphere just is elongated until it is a line, and the line is a ray of light, or you can name it a photon. So what more do we have? No time. Sally Weber, she says that a photon has no time, and I agree on that. So, if this is a sphere, and you are standing here, giving out short pulse of light, making a short observation, you'll find yourself inside this sphere. And everything you see happening on this sphere appears to happen at the same time, because everything is the same distance from you. If you're a traveler, the sphere becomes more and more elliptical. And this still, to the one who makes the experiment, it still appears as a sphere. It appears to be simultaneously everything that happens on the ellipse. And simultaneous everything that happens on the ellipse. Simultaneous everything that happens on this line. When the sphere has gone into a line like that. So the very thin ellipse here, I think, is a tunnel. The tunnel through which our information can tunnel from A to B. And it even can tunnel with any speed, with no time, with infinite speed. But it cannot carry energy with an infinite speed or that is higher than light. That is impossible by Einstein. But it can carry information that has no energy. And what any information can exist without any energy? Well, I think it is the energy that can decide what will happen when it happens in random. Random information doesn't need any information, as I see it. So there we get down to entanglement. In entanglement, things happen to go from A to B at infinite speed. And this is because the tunneling through my ellipses, that's my idea. One thing more, which is quite different from what I said. It is all the redshift in the universe. They say there's a redshift. Stars are moving in all directions. But the strange thing is we have more red shift than blue shift, and that, they say, that proves that the universe is expanding. But I say that doesn't prove anything, because only if they are moving in any direction, they still have a relativistic redshift. They have a redshift just caused by their speed. So therefore, of course, redshift will be dominated whatever direction the stars are moving. It only proves that stars very far from us are moving faster than those very close to us, which is not very surprising. I thank you so much for your